Intelligent Medicine is brought to you in part by Fullscript, my exclusive online supplement dispensary. Fullscript is the most trusted source for professional-grade supplements. It's safe, secure, and with Fullscript's refill reminders, it's totally effortless to stay on track with your supplement protocols. Go to drhoffman.com and click on the store to create your Fullscript patient account today. And if you're a healthcare provider, sign up for a free Fullscript dispensary account at fullscript.com/intelligentmedicine. It's the easiest way for you to prescribe the exact supplement protocols your patients need. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's a podcast I've been very much looking forward to because today we're going to talk to a very original thinker on the issue of optimal diet. Mostly a verity in this field of integrative medicine is that we should be eating plenty of fruits and vegetables. That's pretty much a constant, whether you're on a paleo diet, whether you're on a ketogenic diet, or whether you're on a high-carb, vegan, plant-based diet. It pretty much open season on plant-based foods. But our guest today has something to say about that. And a very, very interesting research that has resulted in a book called The Plant Paradox. And the subtitle is The Hidden Dangers in, quote, Healthy Foods That Cause Disease and Weight Gain. The author, Stephen Gundry, Dr. Gundry, is the director of the International Heart and Lung Institute in Palm Springs, California. He is originally, I believe, a pediatric surgeon, but he's turned his attention to diet-related issues after much research and after publishing this great new book. And so without further ado, here's Dr. Gundry. Welcome. How are you doing?
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. So the book begins with a very dramatic quote. Let me share that with our listeners. Suppose that in the next few pages, I told you that everything you thought you knew about your diet, your health, and your weight is wrong. Okay, so with that prelude, set the stage for that that particular conversation.
Yeah, so I was actually chairman and professor of heart surgery at Loma Linda University and also pediatrics and pediatric heart surgery. So my life was changed about 17 years ago when I watched a gentleman with inoperable coronary artery disease, who I call Big Ed in both of my books, clean out his coronary arteries by changing his diet. And it was so impressive to me what he had done that I followed the principles that he had done, but that were actually identical to my research project as an undergraduate at Yale University on human evolutionary biology, where I looked at the foods that changed a great ape into a human being. And long story short, I put myself on that program and lost 70 pounds and all my issues with cholesterol and hypertension and prediabetes and arthritis and migraine headaches went away. So after about a year of doing this with patients that I operated on at Loma Linda, I decided that it was kind of silly that I should teach people how to eat, first of all, and then maybe I wouldn't have to operate on them, and that's subsequently been true. So I resigned my position and set up an institute in Palm Springs and now also in Santa Barbara, where I asked people to let me look at their blood work every 3 months that insurance would pay for and Medicare would pay for, that we'd send off to various labs around the country. And I'd ask them to let me take certain foods away from them. And I'd ask them to take some supplements from Costco or Trader Joe's or Vitacost or Amazon to see what would happen to some of their biomarkers of inflammation. And that resulted in my first book, Dr. Gundry's Diet Evolution, about 10 years ago, which is remains on the Amazon top 200 books for years. And then after that, a lot of people with autoimmune disease started showing up in my practice, and about 50% of my patients are now autoimmune diseases. And we have shown, and I have a paper on it, the American Heart Association in March, of 102 patients with biomarker-proven autoimmune disease, that 90 of them in 6 months, their autoimmune disease is gone, biomarker negative, as long as they don't eat certain foods. Mm. And let me just as a teaser, a patient just walked out of the room, a prominent politician who has had Barrett's esophagus, or had Barrett's esophagus, for 10 years. And for those of your listeners who are not aware, Barrett's esophagus is the precancerous lesion of the esophagus that everyone knows is caused by gastric acid refluxing up into your esophagus GERD. And everyone knows that the proper treatment is acid-blocking drugs like Nexium or Prilosec or Protonic.
So they say.
And
so they say.
So they say. And about 2 years ago, we took him off of his acid-blocking drugs and put him on my program. And he, last year, was negative for Barrett's esophagus for the first time in his life. And he just told me that his second scope confirms that he has no Barrett's esophagus, and that his GI guy says, "Aren't you so glad you are still taking your right. double doses?" Which he has not taken in 2 years, and he just smiles and nods. And so we have a number of people with Barrett's that have been cured of Barrett's by avoiding certain foods. And so that's just one example that walked out of the office just now.
Mm-hmm. Well, so one of your contentions in the book is that, it's interesting that you're actually from one of the hotbeds of vegetarian nutrition, Loma Linda University. But
true.
Your claim is that not all plant species are optimal for human consumption, that plants may, quote, defend themselves by producing certain substances that may be toxic to humans.
Yeah, through the years, I've actually gotten very impressed with how intelligent plants are. And plants are subject to the same evolutionary pressures that animals are. They want to grow, and more importantly, they want to produce their babies, seeds, and make sure that they grow. And the plant that comes up with the optimal strategy for making new plants wins. Now, plants had it really good before animals arrived, because nobody wanted to eat them. When animals arrived and their first predators were insects, plants had a problem because they couldn't run, they couldn't hide, they couldn't fight. But they're chemists of incredible ability. And one of the books that really profoundly affected me years ago was Michael Pollan's first book, which was The Botany of Desire, on how plants actually make animals do their bidding with chemicals. And I realized, and then research subsequently shows, that plants make animals ill or prevent them from thriving by a variety of factors, one of which has been fascinating to me are these compounds called lectins. And lectins are sometimes called sticky proteins, but they're one of the main defense systems of the plant. And lectins attach to sugar molecules in various parts of us. For instance, they attach to sugar molecules lining our esophagus, lining our mouth, and they incite a inflammatory response from our immune system. Give you an example. If it hurts to swallow, a smart animal would stop swallowing the plant that's making it hurt to swallow. Mm-hmm. And like I talked about in the book, cows get such severe heartburn from corn and soybean lectins that they stop eating. And so that half of the world's production of calcium carbonate, Tums, is mixed into cattle food so that they will keep eating.
That's an interesting factoid.
Yeah. So the idea from a plant is if an animal is not thriving, if an animal's hurting, if an animal, believe it or not, is anxious or depressed, which you can prove lectins will do, then the smart animal says, you know, every time I eat these particular plants or plant babies, I'm not doing good, and I'll eat something else. So that's kind of how things began. Unfortunately, humans are pretty stupid. And when we eat things that bother us, we take Aleve or Advil or Prilosec or an antidepressant, and we keep eating them unaware that the plant is trying to get our attention. So the premise of the book is you got to know who your friends are in the plant kingdom and who is out to get you. And one of the things that I've done through my entire career is to look at what the original foods of great apes and then pre-humans were, and watched the evolution of how we then interacted with other plants. And we're basically a tree-dwelling ape. And we, for the most of our evolution, ate leaves and trees. And we ate fruits and berries, but those would only be in season. Fruits only ripen once a year. Even in the jungle. Interestingly enough, great apes only gain weight once a year in the summer. My editor of my first book just was incredulous that this is possible, and I had to send her several volumes of materials to prove that, in fact, this was actually well known in the primate literature.
And they literally pounds of bananas sometimes, like entire banana fronds disappear into a gorilla, for example. I guess it depends on it's not the amount of calories per se or the fruit per se, but the timing of the consumption of the fruit.
Correct. Yeah, because summer always comes before winter, and winter is a time of less food, whether it's a dry season, a rainy season, a cold season. There's always a time in a yearly cycle where there is less food. And one of the interesting things in primate research is that great apes will gain weight during fruit season in anticipation of a time of less food. In fact, orangutans, just as an interesting factoid, gain about 7 pounds of fat during fruit season. And that 7-pound weight gain is what prompts the female to go into estrus, which is sexual, susceptibility. So she only becomes pregnant when she has enough fat to get her baby through the, And we know that about women, human females, who have very little, fat stores, marathoners, gymnasts, they don't ovulate because we have a sensor that says how much fat is available if she gets pregnant to sustain a pregnancy basically without eating.
Okay, folks, let's pause as we usually do to allow one of our sponsors to share this message with you. As an Intelligent Medicine listener, you know how important it is to ensure that your supplements are genuine, professional grade, and effective. But vetting your sources and tracking down the exact products you need can be a hassle. That's why I use Fullscript as my online dispensary, so I can send you, my patients and listeners, the exact products you need straight to your door by speedy delivery. We only stock the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere. The best part? Fullscript sends out refill reminders when you're running low, so it's totally effortless to stay on track with your supplement protocols. Go to drhoffman.com and click on the store to create your Fullscript account, or ask your healthcare provider to sign you up for Fullscript. If you are a healthcare provider, sign up for a free Fullscript account at fullscript.com/intelligentmedicine. Fullscript is the most trusted source for professional-grade supplements. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA-compliant, and they offer world-class support. Get started at drhoffman.com and click on the store. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. And now back to our guest, Dr. Stephen Gundry. So what's the take-home message in terms of our fruit consumption? Because, you know, here I am. I know you're in California where it's kind of, it's warmer and more seasonal. But here I am in New York. We just experienced single-digit temperatures, and I was able to go to the local store and pick up fresh mangoes and berries, presumably from south of the equator, shipped to us via jet, you know, at great expense in terms of a carbon footprint, but nonetheless, I'm able to shell out, you know, $5.99 for my organic fruit ration. Is this something that may ultimately subvert my metabolism, contribute to my susceptibility to weight gain because I'm eating the fruits out of season?
Yes, absolutely. One of the, your computer, your operating system runs version 1.0. We've never had an upgrade. Your operating system cannot imagine that you could be eating blueberries in New York City in January because they did not exist up until a few years ago. In fact, one of my early patients, as I was explaining this to him, said, "I'm the cause of your problem." And I said, "How's that?" And he says, "Well, I used to work for Conrail, the predecessor of Amtrak on the East Coast, and we invented the refrigerated rail car in the late 1940s to do exactly what you just talked about, bring fresh produce from Florida and California to the East Coast." And he said it did not exist before that. And he says, "I'm your problem." And I said, "Well, actually, you are my problem." And we had a good joke. But what happens is, and we see this all the time, that eating out of season is really one of the big ways that we screw up our computer. And I wish it wasn't true because I happen to love berries, but I do not eat them except locally in the late summer. And just because, you know, it's kind of like the old sexual ed textbooks in junior high school. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do it.
Well, also, you mentioned in the book, it's interesting that when they use a certain ripening technique, so for example, bananas aren't really ready, you know, and then because of the shipping requirements and stuff, they ship them green, and then they ripen them with ethylene. Was it ethylene dioxide? You know, something that is a chemical that is actually released by plants during the ripening phase as a signal to go to maturity. But in doing so, we actually perpetuate the lectins in the plants, something like that.
Yeah. So plants want to protect. So plants actually, most fruit, the seed in the fruit, the plant actually wants you to eat that fruit, and it protects its babies with a very hard shell that can't be digested by the intestinal tract of an animal. And so the baby will be, you know, pooped out with a generous dollop of fertilizer some distance from the mother plant, which is a brilliant strategy. Now, the plant doesn't want you to eat the fruit before the baby's shell is completely hard, so it actually uses quite a number of lectins in the immature fruit to dissuade you from eating that plant before it's time. And again, growing up in the Midwest, any young man learned what's called the green apple two-step, because we would go eat green apples and pay for it with rather impressive abdominal cramps and diarrhea. And again, humans are stupid, and we do it, you know, year after year. But the plant is trying to tell you, no, don't you dare, you know, eat this yet, because my seeds aren't protected. So what happens now with international commerce is that the fruit is picked unripe before the chemical signals from the plant kind of deactivate the lectins in ripe fruit. And so we're getting this kind of lectin-loaded fruit that's completely unnatural, and it's not the same. So there's a couple of double whammies in all this.
Could lectins explain the phenomenon of wheat belly, weight gain associated with wheat?
Yeah, and we go into this a lot in the book, and I think William Davis is to be congratulated on at least bringing this to people's attention, that wheat absolutely can make people gain weight.
Beyond its just sheer caloric
wheat is
effect,
just
beyond the sheer, you know,
yes, exactly,
calories it delivers.
And one of the things that's very clear is that there's a lectin in whole grain wheat, which is called wheat germ agglutinin. And there's some very good studies, and I cite a number of them in the book, that show that wheat germ agglutinin actually acts on the insulin receptor of fat cells and literally continuously pumps sugar into fat cells. It works. These insulin mimetics are insulin-like molecules that can dock on an insulin receptor. Unfortunately, insulin would normally dock on a receptor, let sugar go into a muscle cell or into a fat cell, and then leave when it's released its information. What these insulin-like compounds, like wheat germ agglutinin, do is they lock on to the receptor and then never leave, so that they're kind of constantly pumping sugar into fat cells. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's
with a heavy foot on the accelerator putting a brick on the accelerator, in effect.
And I'll give you an example. When I moved to Loma Linda, I adapted their vegetarian diet. I weighed 154 pounds when I arrived at Loma Linda. And then 16 years later, I weighed 228 pounds.
Wow.
Despite running 30 miles a week and going to the gym 1 hour a day.
Wow.
And eating a healthy vegetarian diet. And I'm going, what the heck is going on? Now, subsequently, you know, I've come to realize what I should have realized growing up in Omaha, that we fatten animals for slaughter by feeding them grains and beans. That's how we do it. And if you look at the underlying principles of using grains and beans to fatten animals, it's very clear, at least to me and others, that the lectins in these are how these animals become fat. And certainly I'm one good example of how that works.
All right. Well, we've certainly laid the groundwork for a discussion of how there can be a paradoxical reaction to a plant-based diet. Not to suggest that we shouldn't be eating plants, but we should be selective. The book is The Plant Paradox, The Hidden Dangers in, quote, Healthy Foods That Cause Disease and Weight Gain. Our guest, Dr. Stephen Gundry, and we'll be right back to continue our discussion in part two. So stay with us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.